Washington County, there'll be very little change as far as what party wins what seat.
Well, Rob, thank you very much for your insight on the results of the May primary and where we're headed in November. I appreciate your feedback.
Rick, it was a very pleasant conversation. I enjoyed it. And, you know, it's quite a complex situation. There's lots of ideas and lots of different ways to look at this. I would invite anybody listening to our conversation to share their feedback about the primary election. All they need to do is go to our website, insidewashco.org, and give us some feedback. Let's talk about this. And Rick, thanks for the opportunity to chat.
All right. As always, Rob, thanks again.
Yep. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
You are tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You are listening to Culture in Motion, the twice-monthly KBOO program featuring my co-host, Ryan Danley, myself, Mike Crenshaw. What's up, Ryan?
How's it going, man? How's your week been?
It's been crazy, man. It's yet another iteration as time marches on through COVID-19 pandemic 2020. Yeah.
It's not getting better.
It's only getting more real. I mean, the capacity of reality to go beyond what I imagine is possible never ceases to amaze.
Yep. It's one step down. Dude was out golfing yesterday, you know, 100,000 people about dead. I don't know what more it could take, you know what I mean, at this point. I mean, it's like, it's almost like I'm almost at a loss for words of it. We got 100,000 people dead. We got no stop in sight. I saw videos of people partying in the Ozarks, you know, and like, you know, I mean, at some point I know we're bored and I know we're over it and I know the honeymoon is over, as ridiculous as that sounds, but like, I don't know. Like, at what point do you say at what point do we just not care anymore? I don't know. It's insane.
Yeah. There's a lot of irony and a lot of contradictions, but the clock that I'm looking at says it's been Monday morning for a minute.
Right.
Time has stopped for us to all get up out of bed and go to work. And this is a metaphor. I'm not talking about go to work, back to your job, go to work. I'm talking about go to work, deal with the crisis at hand, and take the opportunity to be accountable for your own life.
100.
That's where we're stuck. But in a minute, you know, if the universe has been gracious enough to stop the clock so we can get our act together, in a minute we're going to figure out that it's too late because we've been slipping.
Yep.
And that brings me to our guest who's been patiently waiting, my brother Obi Egbuna. What's up, Obi?
How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. I'm glad we reconnected after a few years.
Yeah, it's been a couple.
Yup. Let me tell the folks right quick how we got connected, and then we can get into today's topic.
Yes.
I had been, as you guys know, Culture in Motion is about the intersection between art, culture, music, politics, and activism. And I've been part of a project called the African Hip Hop Caravan. And also, in addition to that, Comrades Through Hip Hop with Dead Prez. And it was M1 from Dead Prez who put you and I together, Obi, after I spent some time touring in Zimbabwe. And we had Brotherton Dye in common from Shabbat Palaces. And mm-hmm. The three of us collectively had been talking about some hopeful future project where we would all be rocking Zimbabwe together, and then that's when they introduced me to you. Tell the people a little bit of your bio and about the work that you do.
Okay, sure. Real quickly, what came out of that is M1 and I executive produced a project called the Battle Cry for Cuba and Zimbabwe.
That's right.
Project. And we did three albums of music that were multi-genre and cross-generational. And it was a project aimed at rallying artists all over the world to fight against the U.S. blockade on Cuba and United States and European Union sanctions on Zimbabwe. So for starters, so I'm the co-producer of that project. I'm the advisor, strategic and tactical advisor to the Mass Emphasis Positive Action and Creativity Youth Brigade, which would be one of the things that we talk about today. I'm a co-founder of the Mass Emphasis Children's and History Theater Company. I'm the external relations officer of the Zimbabwe-Cuba Friendship Association, and I'm the United States correspondent to the Herald, Zimbabwe's national newspaper. And I'm an African history teacher, and I've been an organizer frontline for the last 30 years. And in terms of family history, if my name is familiar to some of your listeners, I'm Obi Egbuna Jr. I'm the son of Obi Egbuna, the world-renowned playwright and author and founder of the Black Panther Party in London and the Black Power Movement in London, co-founder with a brother named Michael X out of Trinidad. So that's just a little bit about me.
Wow. I'm proud to know you. I'm honored to be a friend and comrade, Obi.
Likewise.
Thanks for making time for us today.
Indeed. That's what I'm supposed to do.
Right quick, though, I got to say, Lyndon Kwesi Johnson was a British Black Panther, a Black Panther.
Yeah, he was with him. He was with him.
And that's one of my favorite artists of all time.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us, man, this current effort that Cuba has been going around the world helping people with their medical skill and expertise and personnel for decades.
Yes.
Give us a little history and talk about what's going on right now that you're...
Okay, well, what happened is I have a nephew, Abeku Dada, who is completing his residency at Grady Memorial Hospital in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And he's the co-founder of the Organization of African Doctors, which was an organization that was started by medical students studying at the Latin American School of Medical Sciences in Cuba. So about a month and a half ago, when the corona pandemic intensified, we talked to each other and we said, let's look at something that we can do. So the first thing that we did is we created a written appeal. And in the beginning, many people were calling it a petition, but we had to let them know, let the annals of history guide you. Petitions focus on individuals, appeals focus on organized formations and institutions and other collective expressions and instruments and vehicles. So we did an appeal in the spirit of David Walker's appeal. We did an appeal in the spirit of the one that the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey did to the League of Nations in 1923, the one that Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois did to the United Nations in 1947, which ironically Eleanor Roosevelt fought him every step of the way, even though at the time she was on the board of directors of the NAACP. And of course, the one that Brother Omar Wali, El Haj Malik Shabazz, Malcolm, was working on before the New York Police Department, FBI, and CIA had other ideas in relationship to him. So this was a working tribute to them. So when we did the written appeal, for people to get a chance to see it, before the interview was over, we'll tell people how they can view that. And then after that, we said we should do something with our young people. So we've had the Mass Emphasis Children's and History and Theater Company for 9 years. We've done 20 plays in 9 years, and we've had 28 performances. And but last year, we created a complement to the theater company called the Mass Emphasis Positive Action and Creativity Brigade. So we've had a 20-year-old artist. Last year, he did a poem called Vision, and it was a tribute to Cuba and Venezuela's collaborative effort called Operation Project Miracle, where the goal is to eradicate blindness in the Americas and eventually throughout the world. And thousands of people had their eyesight restored. And then, so he did a video about that. We had a 13 and 10 year old, two biological brothers, do a mixtape tribute to Kwame Ture on Kwame's birthday last year, which was our answer to the Black Power mixtape. Mm-hmm. And then just this weekend, they worked on it for about a month. We did a video appeal, which was a compliment to our written appeal. And it was done by Sia Lee Wright, Jalen Mitchell, and Zion Utsi. Sia did the heavy lifting. She's 16 years old. Zion, the MC, is 20 years old. And Brother Jalen is 21 years old. And all of them have been my students. Zion, I taught from the time he was 11 to when he was 18. Jalen, I taught for 3 years. Sia, I've been teaching since she was 5 years old. And Zion and Sia were in the play we did called Cuba's Greatest Army, a tribute to the Cuban doctors, which we did 9 years ago. That was our second play. And Sia played Asada Shakur, and Zion played a doctor that was stationed in Guinea, West Africa, which historically speaking is the first African nation that Comandante Fidel Castro visited in the 1970s.
Wow, so Cuba has a long history, not only supporting African liberation struggles on the continent of Africa,
mm-hmm.
but supporting the rights for self-determination and liberation for African peoples in the diaspora. A lot of people don't realize that there's a large population of African people in Venezuela, throughout South American countries and Latin America, a lot of African people that have been historically displaced through the slave trade are still struggling against different forms of racial oppression in Latin American society.
Yes.
Could you tell me a little bit about the political nature of the medical diplomacy that Cuba is engaged in? For a lot of our listeners, when they hear Cuba, Zimbabwe, and Venezuela, all they're going to think of is the negative propaganda that they hear about these places in West.
And I love that you posed that question, because we have to deal, because when we focus on the health, when we focus on the education, that deals with the humanitarian dimension of the solidarity, which is of paramount importance this historical moment.
Okay.
Let's just use Zimbabwe as a backdrop. Zimbabwe has a 97% literacy rate, which is the highest on the African continent. That stems from the fact that in 1986, 6 years into their independence, Comandante Fidel Castro and the late Pan-African icon, His Excellency Comrade Robert Gabriel Mugabe, signed an understanding. And between 1986 and 1996, 3,000 Zimbabwean teachers went to Cuba for their training. And those teachers became the backbone for the educational system in Zimbabwe. And that's why they have a 97% literacy rate today. So when people think of Southern Africa and Cuba, the first thing they think about is them fighting in Angola for 14 years against the CIA-trained mercenary unit, UNITA. But you have to take a look at the technical support that they provided in Namibia. As a matter of fact, for people who revere Samora Machel, many people must remember that when Samora Machel's plane mysteriously crashed October 19th, 1986, two people who died with him were his personal physicians, who were Cuban doctors. And those two Cuban doctors are recognized as national heroes in Mozambique. So, and it's very important to point that out. And the fact that Cuba has 4,000 doctors spread throughout the African continent. And the last thing that they got international recognition for was between 2014 and 2016, 400 of them helped eradicate the Ebola pandemic in Liberia, in Sierra Leone, and in Guinea.
Wow.
So that was the last time that they were setting the stage in Africa. And the fascinating thing is every time they would have Martin Luther King celebrations in Cuba, either on January 15th or April 4th, Fidel would say it. He would say Dr. King wasn't the only one with an ambitious dream. And he would say that Cuba continues to pay a debt to Africa. And he said if it wasn't for the blockade, one of the goals that Cuba had was to build a medical school on the African continent. And that is why the doctors that are deployed to Africa, they have a twofold responsibility and function. They, of course, treat the sick for free. But not only that, but they train the doctors who will sign a contract to remain in their nations and break the cycle of the brain drain. So the doctors that are trained, the future doctors of Eritrea, of Burkina Faso, of Gambia, of Sao Tome and Principe, of Nigeria, of Liberia, they're not coming to France, they're not coming to New York, they're not coming to LA, they're not coming to Germany, they're not coming to Denmark. They're going to stay in their nations and be the best doctors that they've ever had. So this is just a highlight of their focus in Africa. And that is why, in addition to the project we're doing now, where our focus is to get the Henry Reeve Medical Brigade, which is the name of their solidarity, their medical efforts. And Henry Reeve is named after a Caucasian who lived in Brooklyn, Mike, who fought with the Cubans against the attempted annexation by Spain and the United States of Cuba. For people who don't know U.S. history, the first seven presidents of this country, that one of their primary foreign policy objectives was to annex Cuba. So Cuba was supposed to end up like Texas, end up like California, end up like Puerto Rico, end up like Guam, end up like the Virgin Islands. So what happened is this Caucasian from Brooklyn went and fought on the side of the Cubans. So the medical brigade is named after him. So we want them to come to the United States and treat people who are affected by the COVID-19 pandemic and the most deadly manifestation of it, SARS-2, COVID-2. We want them to be able to come here to provide training to medical personnel who are not used to functioning in the midst of a pandemic. When they get here, they would work in conjunction and partnership with the National Medical Association, which was an organization that our ancestors created in 1896 because we weren't allowed to join the American Medical Association. They would work with the Black Nurses Association, which is an extension of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey and the UNIA's Red Cross nurses. And they would work with the American Medical Association. And also, we're calling for the Food and Drug Administration to allow initial clinical testing of interferon alpha 2b, which was a treatment and a serum that the Cuban medical personnel developed in their laboratory in Cuba in 1986, which 45 nations have formally made a request for. So that's what the focus of this particular thing is. But also, when I was mentioning Africa, one of our goals is, with more people talking about investment in Africa, us creating a pool of capital to begin to financially support Cuba's efforts on the African continent. Man, that's what our focus is.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Has this been, like, you know, poised, or this been pitched to the American government, or, you know, our medical
world? I'm glad you brought that up. They are several city councils, in one in Minneapolis, one of the board of supervisors in San Francisco, this has been presented to. I had a conference call with the mayor of Newark, New Jersey this morning, Raz Baraka, the son of Amiri Baraka, who led the second major delegation to Cuba 1 year after the revolution in 1960. And got world recognition for his essay, Cuba Libre. Raz Baraka has agreed to write a statement of support. Mayor Baraka has agreed to write a statement of support. And not only that, but he's going to present the appeal to the African American Council of Mayors, the National Conference of Black Mayors, and the World Conference of Mayors, asking them to follow his example. State Senator Malika Sanders Fortier, out of the 23rd District in Alabama, is going to present this to the National Conference of Black State Legislators. And Karen Bass, the highest ranking Democrat on the International Relations Committee of the U.S. Congress, this has been presented to her as well. It's been presented to the Congressional Black Caucus representative in the Virgin Islands and in Indiana, Andre Carson. So we definitely plan to, in the spirit of what Brother Malcolm said, control the politics of our community, which consist of immensely pressuring the elected officials who look just like us.
Do you want to tell the listeners what they can do to support this effort?
If they represent organizations, they can get the appeal and they can write a statement of support for it, and they can begin to look at different aspects of it that they would like to become involved in. if it's dealing with the elected officials, if it's getting newspapers and other media outlets to bring attention to it, if it's getting churches to be involved in it. Because I'm going to tell you guys, the biggest shocker of all for me is when we got the National Council of Churches to support it. And for your listeners who don't know, that is the largest medical, religious / spiritual entity in the United States of America. But then again, it wasn't too much of a surprise because they already had a statement that they put out with the Cuban Council of Churches. So we're looking for church support, we're looking for elected official support, we're looking for media support, we're looking for if fraternities and sororities in the Panhellenic community want to become involved in this. One of my other students is 16 years old. His name is Zahir Muhammad. He's the president of the Black Student Union at DeMatha Catholic High School in Washington, D.C., which has national recognition for its basketball. But he's already engaging all the presidents at the Catholic schools all over the country to become involved in this. We have young people who are part of the HBCU cluster who are trying to get all the HBCU organizations to become involved in this. So we're targeting strategically different organized formations and different institutions so that they become involved in it. And so that we can keep the pressure on so that we can make this happen. For us, this is a continuation of our efforts in 2005 when Councilman Charles Barron, who is recovering from the pandemic, by the way, and his wife, Ines Barron, he's now a New York assemblyman, and also his wife is the councilwoman. So you have, we're targeting New York, obviously for strategic reasons, so targeting different geographical regions. And the San Francisco Bayview newspaper just did an article, but with one of my 14-year-old students, Kaleem Muhammad, where they published the appeal. So we thank our brother, J.R. Velray, for arranging that through the publisher and editor, Mary Radcliffe. So that's what we're looking at doing. We're looking at making this national. We're looking at making this mass. And we're looking at, and then what we want to do, which I'll talk a little bit about, is as the follow-up to this video appeal. The video appeal was a follow-up to the written appeal. But what we're pushing for is July 26th weekend. We want to have a cultural and artistic tribute to Cuba. And the theme is called Africa and the World Thanks Cuba. So we're calling artists from all over the world to perform that weekend. We want to do a virtual show. So you know we're going to be reaching out to you, Brother Mike. So far we have people in Liberia interested, people in Zimbabwe interested, people in Venezuela interested, people in Guinea interested, people in Gambia interested, people in Colombia interested, so people in the Virgin Islands interested, people in Guyana interested. So if everything goes according to plan, there will be artistic representation from artists in those different nations. And of course, we're counting on people within United States borders to be involved in that. This has never been done before. Once again, that is a cultural and artistic tribute to Cuba called Africa and the World Thanks Cuba. And so far in the U.S., the commitments we have, of course, from M1, he's our partner in crime in this, but also the legendary artist Sandra Isidori, who was the first, the only African out of the United States to perform with Fela Kuti's band. And wow. she just got a award from the Pan-African Film Festival for her documentary she did on Fela Kuti, and she has a book about her relationship with Fela Kuti. And for people who don't know who she is, her birth name, her captivity name is Sandra Smith, and she's the one that Fela credits with expanding her horizons when he gave her Malcolm's autobiography.
Wow.
So she's going to perform, and she's identifying artists for us. And one of the other people who signed on to this is the comedian Ida Rodriguez. So we're going to be working with people in the artistic sector to pull this artistic tribute off. So that the artistic and cultural tribute is a follow-up to the video appeal, which you guys just saw, and that's a follow-up to the written appeal from a month and a half ago. So we're going to keep developing different things to expand the network. And there's also another campaign which is very compatible to this called Saving Lives, which is being done by the National Network on Cuba and the Canadian Network on Cuba. And we have a written understanding that we're partners in this effort.
So I want to thank you. You're always so full of information when we taught Obi that time flies. And, you know, our show is only a half an hour. So I want to thank you for stopping by. And I want to actually go out with the video and tell the listeners that if you go to KBOO.FM and you go to the right side of the page, go in the search window, and you type in Culture in Motion, which is the name of this show, what you're going to be able to see is you're going to be able to see an attached link to the video.
And thank you guys very much for posting the appeal. Y'all were the first ones to post it, and y'all sent it to the Pacifica listserv. So we had heard about that when we weren't even in contact with each other. So as soon as I heard KBOO, I sent you a thank you. So thank you for that as well. So much love. We appreciate that very much.
Thank you for all the work you're doing, and I look forward to rocking with you guys in July.
Okay.
Well,
thank you.
Thanks for joining
us. Nice meeting you, Ryan, and keep up the good work you guys are doing. Thank you so much for the support.
Thank you.
And we hope that what we shared today was met your expectations. We hope we didn't disappoint.
Nah.
Right. Take it easy.
Take it easy, man.
Okay, thank you.
All right, well, that was really informative. And yeah, please look, we're going to be putting up a Facebook page shortly, and you can find links to this information and other things that Mike and I come across, and you know, give your thoughts on the show.
Ryan, it's been good rocking with you today and in our new remote format.
Mm-hmm.
We had been maintaining social distance previously, but now we're doing it digitally. So we'll continue to do this. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Culture in Motion. Ryan and I will be back soon with more guests, and have a good day. Thank you.
listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.